been absolutely furious to almost uncontrollable laughing. And I had to run back to the dorm where I lived in an apartment before they saw me laugh. So it was...
Yeah, you had to hold the effect.
That's probably one of the funniest stuff. Yeah. The game has been, you know, so important to me and the coaching part of it and this program, this school. Time gets away so quickly. That's time and health are the two most valuable things you have.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are back in your earbuds and broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina. Guys, we're bringing you another installment of our Dugout Chatter episodes, and we're excited to bring this one to our coaches. But first and foremost, on behalf of the American Baseball Coaches Association, we want to thank each and every one of you, coaches, players, parents, all you guys for listening to the show each week. I mean, we are crossing the lines and expanding our reach, and folks are clamoring to get their hands on this audio gold, connect with the guests that we're having on. It's awesome stuff, guys. So keep listening, keep sharing the show, keep spreading the great word about the ABCA and this podcast. And so again, when it comes to these Dugout Chatter episodes, we move away from our traditional Calls from the Clubhouse shows where we're breaking down baseball fundamentals across every position or we're unpacking special interest topics on the show, and we really move in the direction towards shining a positive light on the countless, boundless, tremendous baseball men that make up the ABCA. So these Dugout Chatter shows were drawn up to be just like two guys sitting on buckets in the dugout, catching up, getting to know each other as we start to open up these coaches outside the white lines a little bit. We talk about the unique path in our game, reflections as they look back over their career and the way that they've grown for themselves, but also for their players and their programs. And we've got a special man on board for you today. It's our first NAIA coach to grace the airwaves with us on the podcast, the head coach at Cumberland University in Tennessee, a lifetime member and ABCA Hall of Famer, Woody Hunt. Now, Coach Hunt's going to be entering his 38th season in the dugout for Cumberland U, his 36th as the head coach there. We're talking 3 national championships, 12 trips to the College World Series, countless conference championships, and a line of loyal former players and assistant coaches that would stretch for miles upon miles. I mean, Woody is one of the true gentlemen in our game. He's known throughout NAIA baseball for his servant approach to leadership within his own program, but also the coaches across the field from him. And he's built one of the most prominent programs in NAIA baseball, and we're excited to get him on the show, sit down with him, and talk through his much accomplished career with the Phoenix. So here we go, coaches. We're taking off on another trip with a true Hall of Fame coach, the head coach at Cumberland University, Woody Hunt. And this terrific podcast is coming at you right now.
Anytime you have a chance to sit down with one of the legendary coaches in college baseball, also an ABCA Hall of Famer, you take advantage of it. We got an opportunity to sit down with the head coach at Cumberland University, Woody Hunt. Woody, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Yeah, glad to be here. Hope I can do some good for you.
I'm sure you will. We're excited about this one. This is one of our first NAIA coach to be on our podcast, and couldn't have picked a better person to sit down with and discuss your career in baseball. That's where we're going to start, because it's a very packed career inside of 38 years, but you've spent all 38 there at Cumberland University. So I think let's go back to maybe your decision to start coaching and talk us through those early years, and then obviously through the 38 years in the Cumberland U dugout.
Well, you know, I was given a chance back in my 20s after I got out of the Marine Corps and was playing and coaching in the old Bluegrass League in Kentucky there, and kind of a semi-pro league type thing. And, and you know, I just had ran across a contact through Mickey England who offered me a job to be here to come as to Cumberland as assistant coach. And we were a junior college, and I came here and I was making hardly anything. I had a place to live and had got that opportunity and just was overwhelmed with the opportunity to coach. And, you know, I stayed in it for 2 years as assistant coach, went to work in professional ball for a little over a year, came back, had the opportunity, went to the University of Kentucky for a very short period of time, like a couple of months, and had an opportunity to come back to Cumberland and to be an assistant coach for one more year and then take over. And I jumped at that and been here ever since.
Well, and you've racked up a lot of wins there in the dugout, over 1,500 wins and three national championships, and we can continue to talk the resume. But I think what's most important, I've had a few of my friends that have come through and played for you, then obviously when you speak to alums, when you speak to former assistant coaches, guys who have played for Coach Hunt, I think, Woody, probably the most glaring thing that pops out of those conversations becomes how loyal they are to you, Cumberland University, the baseball program, because it's very apparent you're coaching more than baseball. You're very focused on coaching them to be great at life, to coach for character. And can you discuss that a little bit? Because I think for a lot of our young coaches that are listening, they can hear a guy that's obviously won a lot of games, and his approach to coaching players, I think, would be very beneficial for us.
Well, that's just part of my nature, part of my personality to coach that way. You know, I don't try to make anything up. I do copy. You look at other coaches and look at what they do, and you try to use things, but I use my personality. That's just who I am, you know. And I do care for the players, but I also care in a kind of a tough way that, you know, we demand winning. You know, we try to win in the right way, with the right perspective, with the right approach, and that is complete commitment, complete dedication, and all those things that add up to developing a person and a team. And if you can't develop a person, you cannot develop a team. So they go hand in hand. Through the process of developing the team, the development of a person automatically takes place. If you don't do it the right way, the kids will not get anything out of it.
And your teams, if you've ever watched Cumberland U play, and Woody, this is a staple of your program, you mentioned it, you guys play with passion, you play with confidence, but that you play a very hard-nosed brand of baseball, but again, you are doing it the right way. How do you go about kind of cultivating that relationship? Is it through recruiting, or is it just the culture that's in place there at Cumberland U?
It's a culture in place that's taken many years to develop that. Former players can tell you that, you know, we demand that, and it takes a while to get used to my style. And I told the players just yesterday, you've got to understand who we are, and it becomes much easier when you understand that. We demand the game to be played the right way, and it's a little more difficult now than it used to be. But it's who we are, the culture that we have developed over the years. And guys come in and get used to that, and they usually grasp a hold of that. If they don't grasp it, they usually don't last long.
There you go. Yeah. Well, you were just talking earlier about, you know, getting out of the Marine Corps and getting a taste of coaching. If you could, when was that moment, maybe that aha moment, or did you know before you got in the Marine Corps that, hey, I think I want to coach as a career? Because there's obviously coaches that are out there and they're coaching and it's a hobby. They do other things, but you've decided to coach as a career and done a fantastic job doing it. What were those moments that maybe struck out to you that, man, this is exactly what I want to do for the rest of my life?
Well, you love the game, you know, and when you find out you can't play as long as you want to, you know, the game is so rewarding as a player, you know that. Mm-hmm. And some people can play a long time and some people can't. Some people can play good and some people can't. That don't mean you can't love the game and do something in the game. But, you know, just the fact that to have a passion and love for the game that started a long time ago. But I think I first got the itch to coach is when I developed my own semi-pro team in Kentucky there and was still trying to play and still kind of put together a team and organize a team and all that. That's when I thought I would like to get into this business. But, you know, it's hard. It's a very tough thing to get into. And the pay is not good, you know, when you first start. You know, mm-hmm. it's so many people want to get into coaching, but they don't understand the sacrifice you have to make financially, especially years and years ago. And coaching a small college, it's even more of a sacrifice. But I think that's when I first started, is back in those years. And just getting the opportunity to be assistant coach and get to see the college game at the JUCO level, and then just say, this is what I want to do, and I had an opportunity to do it.
That's it. I was talking with a small college buddy of mine this past weekend, Woody, and we talked about how a lot of young coaches, they aspire to get the big paying job, and that's their focus, is to go get paid. And what they got to understand, as you mentioned, is for 99% of us, it's not a millionaire's game. And I think the first few years of coaching can be the world's greatest weed eater, because it'll cut out the guys who are doing it for the right reasons, and you better be focused on.
You got that right. If I told you what I made when I first got here, you'd be astounded. Yep. But I'll tell you, I made $100 a month.
There you go.
A place to live, and with my family, and just had to work and try to survive. You know, survival will make you strong, and that's what I did. And a lot of coaches have been through the same thing. You just try to survive. Some get a break, which I did, and some don't. And the ones that don't get a break usually get out of the game because they got to make a living, you know. And it's very difficult. But I'm so grateful that they gave me an opportunity here.
Sure. When you look back at 38 years, and I'm sure these come right to the forefront of your mind, but talk us through the highs and lows. What are those high moments that you can go to and they put a smile on your face, but also those low moments that still maybe stick a little bit that happened throughout your career?
Well, I'll tell you, I've had many highs. I think every season is a high for me. I enjoy it so much and enjoy the game and the players so much, but there's times you feel low about it. But I look at the three national championships. Of course, they're going to be some of the highlights of my career, and there's no sense trying to deny that. But there's been other – I've had great teams that could have won the championship but never did. So I've had so many highs and so many rewarding experiences as a coach. It's really difficult to put, you know, what is the high moment, you know. You know, we've had a number one draft choice here, you know, that type of thing. We've had 80-some players to get a chance to play professionally. We've had a bunch of All-Americans, almost 60-some All-Americans, and all those things you can look at. The process of the program and what we've done is probably the high of my coaching career, just the continuing of our tradition and all that is the biggest high I have. But you look at the three national championships, but probably the two lows, you know, I haven't had many lows, I'll be honest with you. I don't look at it as lows, but if we lost the championship in 2006 in extra innings to Lewis and Clark on their field in 2006 and 1995, we came in runner-up and we have a couple of third-place finishes. So if you could say those are lows, but I really don't identify them as lows. I identify them as highs, really. But you get disappointed because you came in runner-up. But through that process of being runner-up, there are so many rewarding experiences and so many rewarding relationships developed out of those years. You can't. It's a high. And like I say, I haven't had many lows, to be honest with you.
It's so interesting. On our last interview, we had Jamie Shevchik from Keystone College, and he made reference to that. They lost in the national championship game last year. And he said very soon after the game, almost to your point, very soon after the game, he started to process that, you know, hey, the process is everything. So we're going to walk out of here as champions because, I mean, I got to develop these relationships and we've grown young men, and it certainly didn't stay a low for very long. That's an interesting parallel there. You know, getting past maybe the baseball talk a little bit, if you could go back and if you weren't coaching, if you decided not to pursue coaching baseball, this is an interesting question here. What would you have done? What was the dream growing up as a kid that if you didn't get into coaching college baseball, you would have done for a career?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I'd probably be a farmer, maybe. I was raised on a farm in Kentucky there, and I liked that. You know, I hated it at the time, and I remember saying either to my dad or to myself, if I get off this farm, I'll never go back. But I probably would love to go back to a farm now because it helped develop me, and my dad helped develop me. But Maybe the ministry, I don't know. Maybe a sales job, or I don't know. Probably I don't know what I would be doing, to be honest with you. It's hard to either think about that or even fathom that. But, you know, I don't know what I would be doing. I just, it'd be a number of things. And I'm just thankful that God led me to be able to coach. And that's probably my life calling is to be a coach.
That's it. It's tough to see yourself outside the uniform.
Yeah, it is, and I don't know how to explain that, but I maybe have a job mowing grass. I love to mow grass.
You know? There you go. you could have started.
I would be doing something.
You could have started Tennessee's biggest landscaping company, and just mowed grass all day, taking care of yards. That'd have been perfect.
Yeah, I would love to do that, but the only problem, the mowers break down. I'm not very good at fixing them, so
there you go.
Get aggravated when the mowers break down, but. You know, I like to work. I like to be moving around. I like to be active, and I don't know what I'd be doing. You know, I do like to work with people, and the ministry would be something that I would – maybe I've been called into that. I don't know.
Sure.
I feel like coaching is really ministry anyway.
Sure, absolutely. All in how you approach it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and this is kind of along those same lines, just to keep digging. Are there any hidden talents or any hobbies that you have outside the game? You've coached for so long, you got things that pique your interest outside of sport, but are there any hidden talents or hobbies that you have that we don't know about?
I have no hidden talents. I have no hobbies. I told someone that that's my fear of getting out. What would I do? I just don't have any hobbies. I don't fish. I don't play golf. I don't do any of that. I do like to collect baseball memorabilia.
Okay.
Of course, you got to have money to do that.
Sure.
I don't have any money. I'm not destitute, but you know, but I like to collect things, and I like to go to flea markets and stuff like that, yard sales to see what I can find. That's my hobby, is collecting baseball memorabilia. And I have a strange hobby. It's not a hobby, but I think it's something I will do later on, is I like to write poetry, you know, and okay. I've done a little bit of that, not much, but I like to reflect and on situations and write about it. So I may write some poetry, not to do anything with, just for my own satisfaction.
Well, I mean, you have written a book. I mean, you're one of the first authors we've had on the show, that's for sure.
Well, I didn't really write it. I told somebody, I just talked that the guy interviewed me throughout the process. And he asked me questions, and I just talked out the book. And the guy that wrote it was, you know, he's a big country music writer at one time and just a great friend. And so it was a good experience.
That's neat. Well, along those same lines, what is maybe your most prized possession that you have that's baseball memorabilia? What's something neat that our listeners would love to know that you have in your possession?
Well, I'm a big Mickey Mantle fan. I was, you know, to me, he's the best talent who's ever played the game. I've got a signed baseball that a friend of mine gave me. I have a signed artwork that he signed, not in my presence, but I got it from a dealer, an artist. And so I collect his stuff, and I don't have as much as I want. But I do have some Mickey Mantle stuff that's, you know, pretty valuable, you know, in the memorabilia business. It's, you know, anything with Mickey Mantle on it and with autographs is something to be prized. So I do collect that when I can. Like I say, it's hard to afford Mickey Mantle stuff.
Sure. That's it. If you could look back, if there are any stories that jump off to you, maybe it's like just some of the funny moments that you've had in the dugout or on the bus or on the road with your team, or there any of those moments that stick out to you that are still funny to this day?
Well, there's so many of those, I'm telling you.
Sure.
That's what makes the process so, you know, so wonderful, is you have so many, many stories, and the players get together and they start telling things, and I can't remember everything that happened, but the players are very specific in what they can remember.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's been so many, but there's one story that kind of stands out that we talk about a lot. We were a junior college, and we just played Western Kentucky, and we had beat them in the fall as a fall game, and we had a really good JUCO team. I was feeling really good about our team, and we were coming back from Bowling Green to Lebanon, and we were taking two vans. In those days, you just crammed everybody in vans, did the best you could. And we got into the city limits of Lebanon, and we looked over to my left, and one van was passing the other, and they was mooning our van. Well, they mooned the van that I was riding in. So we got really, really, I got really, really mad. Mm-hmm. We drove to the field, and it was dark at that time. So we went to the warning track, and we ran foul poles for about, I think they said 40 to 50 foul poles we ran that night. So after we got through running, I had a fungal bat in my hand, and I was pretty mad, so nobody didn't want to challenge me that night. And we went back to the dugout, so I made them strip all their clothes off except their jock straps.
Yeah.
I said, okay, I want everybody to take all your clothes off and put them in a pile here. And so they did that reluctantly, and through me telling they had to do this in a very firm way. So they did that, and they were in their jock straps. And so I picked up all the clothes and took them to center field and threw them out in the center field. And I came back to the dugout. I said, now you want to show your butt? You know, go get your clothes and get back to the dorm. So they were running out to center field in their jock straps. And I went from being absolutely furious to almost uncontrollable laughing. And I had to run back to the dorm where I lived in an apartment before they saw me laugh. So it was.
Yeah, you had to hold the effect.
That's probably one of the funniest stuff. Yeah. And the joke is, all the neighborhood people were looking out the windows at us, so I don't know. So we're right in the middle of the neighborhood, but we don't have lights. So anyway, that would probably be a story that one of the highlights of the funny stories. But there's been so many, I just can't pinpoint one more than that one.
Sure, that's great. Now, you've obviously interacted, Woody, over the course of your career with so many great coaches, had a chance to compete against a lot of them, but also notice them from afar. If you had to kind of construct your, we always talk about this on sports radio, the Mount Rushmore, but to you, your personal Mount Rushmore of guys that have influenced you or guys that you really admired or looked up to, who would those three or four guys be up on your wall?
Well, I would stay at my level, and then I'd like to mention a couple other guys. First of all, Ken Dugan from Lipscomb, David Lipscomb at that time. I'm sure you've heard the name, but
sure.
One of the great coaches of all time. Won 2 national championships and over 1,000 games. I forgot. He died several years ago, he'd be on there for me. Then Gordy Gillespie, of course. Uh-huh. Everybody, I think he'd be on a lot of people's Mount Rushmore. And then Ed Sheff, he won so many championships at Lewis and Clark, and some say because they hosted it, and that may be true to some extent, but very tough coach, very disciplined coach, and just a tough-minded coach who I became good friends with, before he retired, and mm-hmm. And then I would put up there John Salinas. I never coached against. I just admired him, what he did. And I think he's probably up there with a lot of people's Mount Rushmore. John Skillings did as much for the game as anybody, I think.
Yep.
And I never met the man, but I've all heard him talk at the conventions and all that. But those four would be it come to mind. But there's so many. I think the greatest coach in college history, in my opinion, is Skip Berkman. And mm-hmm. I've met Skip and Norm a little bit. I think he's the greatest of all time, in my opinion, the greatest motivator, the greatest teacher. Of course, we have some now that are making the name from, like, locally here. Tim Corbin is a great name that we'll go hear more and more about.
Sure.
I think Tim has more influence on the game than anybody I know of right now. But there's so many. I'm personally pulling for Mike Martin to win one because he's been in the game for so
mm-hmm.
long.
Mm-hmm.
That type of thing. But there's been so many guys who've influenced me from the dugouts, and I just hope that I can influence coaches like some other coaches have influenced me. You look at the other dugouts, sometimes you get inspired by who's in the other dugout, and that's what I want to do to young coaches. Hopefully I can do that. Whether I can or not, I don't know. But I used to look across the field to Ken Dugan, and we would have absolutely unbelievable games against them. They were highly talented, but that was such a team. He had the team under control. He was a very good teacher, a very good motivator, and a very strong disciplinarian. When you looked across the field and you saw his team, you better be ready to play. And I think he is one of the big influences in the entire South for college baseball. But those guys, I think, would be on my Mount Rushmore.
Well, that kind of feeds into the next question. Can you reflect on maybe some of those moments of maybe competing against Coach Dugan or other coaches that you mentioned Ed Sheff, and that you really enjoyed competing against, and there were any of those coaching moments or game moments that really stick out to you from those battles?
David Lipscomb, the old field on campus there, this brought about a tremendous personality for the whole game. The atmosphere, there was no big grandstands, any of that, no lights. The dugouts were just the old-fashioned dugouts. They finally built new dugouts there. But just that feel there and just the fact that we were playing David Lipscomb at that time just brought out so much competitive spirit from our teams. I can't pinpoint one game or over another. It's just when we played them back in their heyday, and we were really getting good at that time, that brought the best out of our team. But playing Lewis and Clark at the World Series at their field was a tremendous, tremendous honor. Big crowds, loud crowds, 5,000 or 6,000 people mm-hmm. just on top of you. And for the championship games in 2006, such an atmosphere that it just got you so wrapped up in the game, and every emotion you could imagine came through you that night in 2006. We finished runner-up, but playing Lewis and Clark, they played hard, they played tough, and you know you had to be at your best to beat them. Those games just stand out so much to me. And then, back when we won it in 2014 on their field in the same circumstance, a different head coach, but we beat them in 2014 mm-hmm. for the championship on their field was a big highlight for us. And because, you know, beating the host team on their field with the 5,000 people in the stands, it's, you know, and the loudness of the crowd and all that, it's just special, special moments. But if I could go back to the old days, you know, we used to play Division One, you know, all the time. It's just part of our schedule. We played them, and the fact that how we competed against Division One teams were a highlight. We beat Auburn one year with Bo Jackson playing. Yeah. We beat Ole Miss. We beat UT. We beat Todd Helton one day on our field when he was pitching. Some of those games stand out. You know, we played at a very high level sure. back in those days.
That's great. And this is kind of a two-part question, but I think specifically for you, this really gets, again, really in-depth on looking back at yourself and your career and your development growth as a coach. If you could stand in front of that young Woody Hunt that maybe is in the first few years of being a head coach, and especially be given the perspective you have now, have so many years under your belt, when you look back, are there things that you wish you knew then? I mean, obviously you had to go about your business. You had to walk your path and learn, but things that you look back that you wish you maybe have gone a different path as a young coach?
Well, I sacrificed too much, Jeremy. I probably put baseball in front of my family too much. I realize that now. My boys played for me, of course, but, you know, that's something I regret a little bit. I just spent so much time in this program, and I regret that a little bit, even though I knew it was necessary. That would be one of my regrets. And the second thing is I would look around a little bit more and enjoy the time, the present time, because time gets away so quickly. I would enjoy moments more. It's just the rat race of when you're coaching, when you're young, recruiting, getting to working on the field, you did it all, did everything. So enjoy the time. Understand that every moment is important. I don't know what I would do different. I just think I would probably, I sacrificed a lot with family time.
Sure.
And that's, I realize that now. But, you know, it was all for the good. There's nothing bad came out of it. It's just that, you know, building a program, you got to sacrifice, and time is one of them. And and so I think that if I could do one thing, I would look around, enjoy people, enjoy the game a little bit more, and not just be in a rat race all the time. Does that make sense or not?
But makes total sense.
The game has been, you know, so important to me and the coaching part of it, and this program, this school. You know, it's just been, time gets away so quickly, and that's probably the next thing I would do is appreciate time, because time and health are the two most valuable things you have, and time gets away so quickly. I can't even fathom how quickly it gets away.
And this is the last question for you, Woody, but, you know, being an ABCA Hall of Famer, spending so many years at convention, I love the fact that I think anytime you could mention John Scalinos on our ABCA podcast, we're doing something right. But so many conventions, so many speakers, so many relationships that you've built there. What's the ABCA meant to you over the course of your career and your development, attending convention, those type of things? What's ABCA mean to you personally?
Well, it means so much. It's just, you feel a sense of coaching pride when you go to those things, those conventions. You just feel like you belong to something great. It's helped develop my career. It's helped me develop friends, and it's just a great situation. I haven't been to all of them, but I've been to a lot of them, and I really enjoy it. It's just a highlight of every year for almost every coach, and it's just I just appreciate how that organization has grown over the years, and what they've done within the convention and in the organization. Just what you all have done in the last 3 or 4 years with all the benefits and all of it has been tremendous. So I would recommend any coach at any level to get involved with that organization. I think any coach would tell you the same thing. It's just meant so much for all of us to be part of that.
That's great. Well, thank you for saying that. I will pass those kind words along. We know you're getting ready to play today, but and we're both battling colds. But I tell you what, we competed. We tackled adversity, and we dominated the interview. So, Woody, I really do appreciate your time. Thanks for joining our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, and we wish you the best of luck the rest of the season.
Hey, thanks so much. Enjoyed it.
It's always a pleasure to sit down and reflect with one of the very best in our game. Huge thanks to Coach Woody Hunt for joining us on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, one of our Dugout Chatter episodes. It's amazing to me to listen to how an accomplished coach looks back at their career. Love how Woody has turned into what would be perceived as low points and really flipping those into high moments, keeping the perspective of growing up young men and that being the driving force behind his passion for coaching. So it's awesome stuff, Woody. Again, thanks for the time joining our show. We wish you and the Phoenix the very best this season. And you know, after we stopped recording, Woody lamented that he really wished he had added in some words about the beauty of NAIA baseball. So he's been just a long time advocate and voice for its high level of competitiveness, the brand of baseball that comes out of NAIA. And he wanted to make sure that we imparted that to each of you guys. So I know I started my career as an NAIA assistant, and he's right. Depending on who you're playing, the best NAIA teams could hold their own with the high levels of the NCAA. There are some fantastic teachers of the game, great men that are coaching NAIA baseball. So for the high school and travel coaches, as well as the parents and the players that listen to this podcast, make sure you're open to include NAIA schools in your recruiting process. Head out and go see some games for yourself. Let the play on the field decide for you. So see you there, Woody. I got your back on that one, my man. We want to make sure that we impress that upon you guys. I'm excited to have our first NAIA coach on with Coach Woody Hunt. So as we keep moving forward, you'll want to make sure you're dialed into the release of our podcast. We come out on every single Tuesday, and here's a few ways you can stay tuned. One way, stay clued into our website, abca.org. If you click on the resources tab at the top, Call Some Clubhouse podcast link will be right there waiting for you. You can click, scroll through all of the content and guests that we've had on up to this point. Another great way, you can subscribe to our show. We have it for your iPhone or your Android device, and every Tuesday we release a brand new episode. It'll pop up on your phone, pop up on your computer. These are perfect for the drive to and from the office, or just on the bus with your team, or listening during your workouts, really any time that fits your schedule, coaches. These are here for you to be listened to on your time. So that's one great way. The last way, just stay tuned to our Twitter account at ABCA1945. We'll always release it on Tuesdays, and again, we'll follow it up during the week with quote images, links for the show, and we hope that you're retweeting, liking those, and spreading the great word about our guest, but also what we're doing with our podcast. So again, we're working hard, guys. We're trying to connect you with the very best baseball minds in our game. We're trying to get them on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and deliver this audio gold directly right back to you. Now, if you were on Twitter last night, you might have seen some activity floating around. We had one of our hashtag ABCA chats last night talking about infield play and development. Now, if you're interested in joining one of those, every 2 weeks we have a hashtag ABCA chat on Monday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Very simple to join in. Get on Twitter, search hashtag ABCA chat, click on latest at the top, and boom, you're in. You can follow along on the current timeline. You could actually go back through, search that hashtag, and see every ABCA chat we've ever had. Infield, pitching, base running, all kinds of topics. That information is on there. And what it is coaches from around the world checking in, sharing their information, engaging with one another, getting to know each other personally around baseball topics. It's an awesome thing to be part of. And we want to make sure, again, guys, that you're aware of our next ABCA chat, which will be Monday, April the 3rd, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We hope you're checking in with us. It's going to be a fantastic time. We look forward to seeing you on there. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. You can find me on there as well at Coach Sheets 3. You can also reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. We love the feedback, guys. We're working to broaden our reach throughout the ranks of the association, trying to bring on this endless listing of dedicated member coaches. And we want to hear from you guys, suggestions for the show, ideas to keep making this bigger and better. So tweet at us, shoot us a message, shoot us an email. We love hearing from you guys. And lastly, we just hope you're part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity here at the ABCA. Over 8,000 coaches worldwide have joined what we're doing here, guys. It's only $45 to be a member. We give you personal liability insurance. We give you Inside Pitch magazine, hotel, rental car discounts, access to our extensive video library. It's all right there for you. We just want to see you jump on board with us here at the ABCA. So again, coaches, more podcasts, more info, more great guests are up. Stay tuned into our podcast. We look forward to connecting with each of you guys really soon. And until next week, keep growing, keep developing. We wish you and your club the very best. Also, thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.